barbecue back there, and you didn't invite me. Hurt my feelings.
You'll be pleased to know this is the last time I'm hosting. I don't care anymore. I'm joking. I never did.
Braxton Miller's loose spin move. Miller heading for the end zone.
You're in no position to lecture the public about anything. You know nothing about the real world.
He'll run it after the 10, 15, 20. 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 45. There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Lucky for me, the press can barely speak English.
But they are who we thought they were.
Whoa, he has trouble with the snap. And the ball is free. It's picked up by Michigan State's Jalen Watts Jackson. And he scores on the last play of the game. Unbelievable.
Well, then get the fuck out of here, then. Okay, see ya.
It is Thursday, September 1st. Welcome to Menace to Sports. It's officially college football month. I know we had week zero. Wipe your ass with it. That was a preseason week. It is officially the month of college football. And us here at Menace to Sports, we are ready for it. We've been grinding on working on our rollout of our content. We have so much going on this month. I'm not going to even bore you with all the stuff we have going on, because we will talk about it ad nauseum moving forward. But we got a bunch. We have something going out every day. If you subscribe to our YouTube channel, just click the subscribe button right now, like this video, and turn on the bell, because we are doing something every day, 7 days a week, every day this month. We are going live at some point, like after the game on Saturdays, et cetera, et cetera. So just subscribe and turn on the bell. That's all you need to do, and you'll get notified when we go live. So we got a bunch to unpack in this show. I want to break down the Oregon-Georgia matchup that is Saturday, and it's going to be a great game. Dan Lanning takes on his sensei in Kirby Smart. So we're going to talk about the likelihood that they shock the world and upset the defending national champions. Also, we have a dumbass sports media personality of the day. We're going to have to start calling it of the day, because there's so many fucking idiots out there that it's like, You could do one every day, and it's always mind blowing. I feel like, I forget the name of the movie where The Rock goes back to his hometown and just starts fucking wiping people out with 2x4s and shit. That's what I feel like I'm doing right now in the sports media world. Nobody's safe, not even friends. If you're a fucking idiot, you're getting called out on this show. And if you didn't see the show graphic, Stephen A. Smith is that guy. So I want you to comment before we get started. Who's the dumbest of the dumb? Right? Who is the lowest IQ in sports media? Just curious. Just throw out anyone that you can't stand the most that is on ESPN, Fox, CBS, doesn't matter where. If they are a part of sports media, who's the dumbest motherfucker out there? I'm curious your thoughts. And we might have to have a poll, you know, at some point to figure out who it is. So a bunch of other shit to talk about. But before we go further, Chris, how the hell are you?
Dude, I literally woke up and it's like the Christmas before Christmas. Like, we get football today. And I'm just like so fucking excited to finally, because everyone's an offseason champ, and now we got to line this shit up and go play. And I am so, so excited. You got any game day traditions, Zach? Like, what do you do now that, you know, you watch your games?
Yeah, you know what? It depends on if I have my older kids or not, because, you know, then it involves my son, and my daughter's always in a bad mood because we're going to watch football all day and she's bored and wants to go to a friend's house. So, but, you know, we don't really go anywhere. I hate going places and watching games unless we have an event, obviously, which we're not doing this year. But, you know, I like watching them at home with multiple TVs, just so I can take everything in, jot some notes down for Sunday when I start studying the film, is mostly what we do. And sometimes we'll have some people over, but that's about it. We don't really leave the house on college football game days.
You do any, like, game day food or anything, bro? Like, you Buffalo wing guy?
I've done it all, bro. I've done it all. I mean, we'll smoke meat. We'll make wings. We've done homemade gourmet pizzas before. I do chili once it really gets to feeling like fall. My chili is by far the best chili you'll ever have. You can ask Johnny the Bullet from Scarlet and Great. He talks about it all the time. It's legit. My chili is legit, legit.
You want to do a Menace chili cook-off?
I'm in. Let's do it.
All right. Set the table, bro. Your ideal game day spread, what's on it? And then the chat's going to fry you if there's not enough good shit on there.
I'm going to tell you right now, I'm going to find a picture of the cookout I did the first – I think it was the first college football game after I got fired. I'm talking, it was stupid. I mean, smoked brisket, smoked stuffed jalapenos with bacon wrapped stuffed jalapenos. There was fried chicken, mac and cheese, everything homemade. Homemade buttermilk cornbread. I mean, I don't even remember all the stuff I made. So I'm going to put a picture on Patreon so everyone can see what it was, because it was literally like when I looked at our island in our kitchen, I was like, holy shit. Like that was a lot of work, but that's a legit ass spread.
There's game day. And then there's Thanksgiving. Nothing else can compare.
That's it.
And I'm a Jameson drinker, bro. I drink Jameson on game days too, depending on how nervous I'm getting.
If Ohio State plays at noon, because that's the most important game for this show, right? Essentially, I might have a couple drinks after their game on a game day, but like a night game, I'm not that guy that's going to wake up at 11 a.m. start pounding beers. Because by the time Ohio State comes around, I'll be three sheets to the wind. Like, whoo, what happened on that play? Oh shit, I forgot to watch. I don't know. Or I'll be socializing or on social media. I won't pay attention like I want to. Especially now with a reaction show, I don't know that I can sit there and have drinks on a college football Saturday and then give intelligent takes. I'll become a dumbass sports media personality.
No, I'm gonna be loose up in this bitch after the games. What's wrong with him? Well,
you know, it's funny, kind of like you are in the spaces, right? Because JB launched the space last night, and I jumped in it, and it was as big or bigger of a shit show than your locker boy spaces.
It probably was.
Man, it was nuts. But I want to address one thing. I love calling out people that pop off. I called out Malik Zaire yesterday. It went pretty viral. The video did, as far as numbers are concerned. It's popping. If you go check it out, we'll put it on this overlay if you want to watch it. This man can't stop talking about Ohio State. Then he had the audacity to say Urban was calling him and begging him to commit before he went to Notre Dame. And I'm just here. And then I said, I literally, this is not true. And he made some stupid comeback with like, oh, just another bald white guy that's mad. I'm like, no, bitch. I was the receiver coach sitting in the fucking recruiting meetings when Tim Hinton, the guy that was recruiting Malik Zaire, was sitting there trying to get the quarterback or the staff to buy in on him. And the staff, Urban, the offensive coordinator, myself, we watched the tape 1,000 times. And every single time it was like, Tim, he's not good enough to play at this level. We never offered him. Urban never called him, begged him. It's like now we're just reaching and flexing nonsense on social media. It's just, it's sad. It's sad. Like, stop it. You're talking to the wrong guy. You can say that shit publicly, but I was fucking there. I was in the recruiting meetings. I was talking to our offensive staff. Like, you didn't have an offer. No one was begging you to come to Ohio State. You went to Notre Dame and you still have a chip on your shoulder because one, your career didn't pan out. And two, we didn't want you. That's why you're trying to shit and dunk on Ohio State. Period. So can we close the book? Last nail in the coffin. Shut the fuck up. Your points were wrong and you're only doing it to shit on Ohio State because you didn't get offered. Period. End of story. It's okay to be true. You got to look yourself in the mirror with reality at some point in life, Malik.
Because he popped off for no reason. And it's funny because his boy listens to our show, Zach. Because remember, his boy got up in the chat and was like, hey, like I took Ohio State over Notre Dame with Malik Zaire. Was that a good bet or not? And we laughed and giggled and said, yeah, it was a great bet. So the fact that he's popping off like this is kind of crazy.
Well, it's one of those things. You make a statement. He made statements, right? Ohio State plays bottom dwellers or something. He said something. Mm-hmm. Bottom feeding schools and the TV. This is the only big time TV game. Well, I just completely destroyed his whole argument. But then he wants to start shitting on Ohio State and how they wanted him. It's like, wait. I thought we were talking about Notre Dame and the TV. What happened to that? We jumped to a new topic because you're so fucking wrong. And if you put that out publicly, you open yourself up to criticism. And that's what he did. He got it. He got bodied. He got buried. And now here we are talking about, did he get an offer or not? It's like, come on, man. You look like a fool. And he might be a good kid. I don't really know him.
Like, I mean, he probably is.
As you know, it's what we used to say when a kid stunk on a football team. Like, sweet kid, comes from a good family.
It's like the worst thing. It's like when you ask about a player. Yeah, sweet kid. So, I mean, I know that there must have been an offer reported that he had, I guess, when he was.
All these quarterback offers are contingent offers, right? There's no quarterback that will ever get an offer from Ohio State without seeing him throw live in person. And then you get a. I guess you call it a committable offer. It doesn't really matter. It's okay. Did we see him throw? Do we really want him? Let's recruit him and get him to commit. That's it. Those three things never happened for Malik Zaire. I don't care what Tim Hinton told him in Alter High School to get in the game that he had an offer or whatever. Nobody saw him throw or liked him when he threw. They didn't recruit him to get him to commit. And that's just the moral story. It doesn't matter.
And also, like, if that offer appears on 247, like, how often is Ohio State going to go back through and call somebody and be like, no, that kid didn't get an offer, take it off the sheet?
They never do. They don't care. Oh. And a lot of times when you do, because you know what the communication really is. And most of the time, all that matters is your communication with the high school coach. Because if you don't want that kid and he thinks he has an offer, as long as the high school coach and you are on the same page with what you've said and what you've offered, then when, if a kid tries to commit, you're like, listen, we didn't offer you. Then the high school, you're not going to piss the high school coach off. Right.
Exactly.
So, they, I mean, kids would do that all the time. Like, oh, got an offer from Ohio State. I'm like, bitch, I didn't offer you. Like, I told you we really wanted you and I loved your film, but I didn't say you had an offer, but you could tell people that. I don't care. It's not going to come back on me.
Here's my last little fun fact on Malik. So he was class of 2013, Zach. He said that Urban was calling, begging for him to commit. And it's not like, you know who's committed that year? JT Barrett, that holds just about every single record at Ohio State. So that was our quarterback. So to say we were begging, calling, when but honestly... Listen.
You just look at the quarterbacks Tom Herman recruited, right? Mm-hmm. He, for all the flack I give Tom Herman, he was really good at his job. I mean, he went out and found JT Barrett. JT Barrett wasn't a highly recruited kid. Texas didn't even offer him. But the kid set every record in Ohio State history, right? He goes out and finds Joe Burrow in Athens. Mm-hmm. Like, Joe Burrow, Nebraska didn't even recruit him as a legacy.
Nebraska right? didn't want him the second time.
No. And so, like, the quarterbacks he brought in, he did an outstanding job. So to sit here and act like Malik Zaire's in Dayton and a great player and Ohio State wanted him bad, I promise you, if Ohio State wanted Malik Zaire, Urban and Tom Herman would have got him.
Would have sealed it. Would have sealed it. But that's enough about that. Oh, wait, we got a little Zaire comment. Shout out Elks for the five. Zaire was a shit when we played him in high school. Left those bums with minus 2 yards rushing. Picked him off twice. Yeah, Elks, talk your shit.
Talk your shit. That's the Centerville Elks, if you are confused. So there you go, Malik. You thought I was talking mad shit. Centerville's up here popping off.
He's like, he picked you
up. We can't have back-to-back dumbass sports media personalities on this show. That's not allowed. So as our cover graphic told the story, it let the cat out of the bag, I present to you our first dumbass sports media personality of September, none other than the first ballot unanimous Hall of Famer in the Dumbass Sports Media Hall of Fame, Stephen A. Smith.
Best rivalry in college football.
Well, the two that people are going to bring up are Michigan, Ohio State, and Alabama, Auburn.
How about Alabama, Georgia? I mean, Georgia's the reigning, defending national champions. If I got an elite program against another elite program who don't like each other and are scheduled to compete against one another, we ain't wait 5 years for the matchup. They going at it each year. You know the encounter is inevitable, okay? And they give you some sizzle to look up, to look forward
so
to.
So much conviction when
That's
he talks.
A rival.
That's a rivalry. That's a rivalry. So Alabama, Georgia is the biggest rivalry in college football. Oh, Chris, go ahead. I'll get your thoughts before I body this stupid motherfucker.
Well, he contradicts himself with that. Because first of all, the little Skip Bayless lookalike on the other side, I don't know who the fuck that guy is, but he's been around seeing some goofy shit. And it's quite clear that they're really pretty bad because they got rid of Max Kellerman, or at least on this particular episode, to the guy that literally could play Skip Bayless in a movie if you were to cast one. So he's had the right idea. He said, you know, Auburn, Alabama, Ohio State, Michigan, and then went on to give his points. And then Stephen A. Smith said Georgia, Bama, which is not a rivalry. And then he went on and said it needs to be a rivalry if teams have each other on the schedule. Pause there, not so fast, because Alabama and Georgia don't have each other on the schedule, but that's neither here nor there. Second of all, it's disrespectful to all of the actual rivalries out there. Like, just because two teams are elite and they view each other as rivals in terms of recruiting doesn't mean it's a legit rivalry, because there has to be a sense of history and historic value to it, no matter what anybody says. Zach, right. Rip this guy to shreds.
So before we even get to what he said, the first thing is this. They have to play, and you hit the nail on the head. They have to play. Bama versus Georgia is not a yearly game. So off the bat, shut the fuck up. You're done. Your conversation is null and void. You are officially stamped right on the fucking forehead, a dumbass sports media personality. That it's already done. But let me just continue to dig deeper and deeper in the ground for where your body may lay. They did not play in 2019. 2017, 2016, 2014, 2013. They've only played four of the last nine seasons. Not even half of the last nine seasons. Over half. They haven't played. Nick Saban has been at Alabama for 16 seasons. He's played Georgia in only eight of those 16 seasons. You cannot have a fucking rivalry unless you play. That's first and foremost. Secondly, to the next argument, right? Bama is 7-1. in the last 8 meetings. So let's relax, because Georgia won once, that now there's some heated rivalry. Georgia-Florida is a far bigger rivalry. Alabama-Auburn is a far bigger rivalry. This is not a rivalry yet. Now, if they meet every year in the SEC Championship for the next 5 years, call it a rivalry, right? That's fine. But you also, at that point, can't ignore the history that is needed to supplant an Ohio State-Michigan as the biggest rivalry in college football. And I even went to Webster. And part of the problem is, what is a rivalry, right? The dictionary's definition is, it is a competition for the same objective or for superiority in the same field. So technically anyone could be a rivalry, but as it applies to college football, history is tied to that superiority and objective. You have to play consistently. I mean, Ohio State and Michigan have played like 116 times, right? They play every year. It's a close series matchup. So This is not a rivalry, but Stephen A., this is not even close to Stephen A. Smith's top 10 dumbass takes. It's just a dumbass take.
Right. No. It is a bad one, not in the upper echelon. Zach, I'm getting cooked in the chat because I think a month ago I referenced Clemson as a rival, and I do believe Clemson is a rival for Ohio State. But if you ask me about rivalry games, I wouldn't classify Clemson Ohio State as a rivalry game because they're not on each other's schedule. The reason I view Clemson as a rival is because we recruit against them, and then that's the team that's in the way. So, like, at the top,
so it goes back to the definition of the word. Like, technically, anybody, and I'll even go further. I'll read. As a verb, rival typically has a meaning that relates to this latter sense of the noun. The verb is most often used to say that someone or something possesses qualities or aptitudes that approach or equal those of another, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a rival in the way you're trying to use the word, and in the true definition is just that it's someone similar to you, right? Similar. Yes. You're on the similar level. So is Georgia and are they rivals? I mean, yes, when it comes to recruiting and, you know, going, but the, as far as a college football rivalry, history rivalry and consistency game. Matter. Yeah. Right. Exactly. But the word rival, yes, Clemson rivals Ohio State on the recruiting trail. When and if they play, they're both evenly matched teams. Like, the true application of the word, yes. But in college football, we use that word to define a year-in, year-out fucking brawl of two evenly matched teams. That's just what it is.
Exactly. And Molly asked about a rivalry game. Like I view Notre Dame as a rival, Zach, but that's not a rivalry game, if that makes sense.
It does.
So that's where I'm at with that. Do you have what are your top five rivalries, Zach? Like, rival games a year.
My top five, I'll give you my top six rivalry games, because I think, you know, once you get outside of that, you're getting some watered down. I think, of course, the game, right? The game. It's always the highest rated regular season game. It's always massive. And, you know, there was a little stretch there where it wasn't that competitive. But for the most part, it's been a storyline, right? Whether it's a dogfight, Curtis Samuel overtime win, right? Last year, Michigan gets revenge and plummets Ohio State, right? Or it is this defense is on a revenge tour and Dwayne Haskins lights that ass up. There's always something magical about that game. So Ohio State, Michigan is number one. Right. They've played, I think if I do the math right, 116 times, right? 117. If you, like I do, I count a forfeiture as a loss because they ducked the game merely 2 years ago. So Ohio State, Michigan is one. The number, my favorite rivalry, but I can't put it over Ohio State, Michigan, is the Army Navy game. I mean, it almost deserves its own list because of what is behind it. The storylines, exactly. I mean, the militaristic aspect of it. It's just, seeing those cadets in uniform in the stands, it's like I'm getting chills talking about it because it's almost like an exhibition. It's so fucking cool. Those are my top two. Alabama Auburn is three. The Iron Bowl, right? The SEC West is on the line. It's interstate. It is massive. I mean, from killing that big ass tree with turpentine or whatever that crazy drunk fan did, the storyline is there, right? It is truly been a competitive series. Obviously, Saban has started tilting that in Bama's favor, but Bama's only up 48-37-1 on Auburn. And then my fourth one is the Red River Shootout, Oklahoma, Texas. Same reasoning, right? One, it's a neutral site game. They're close in proximity. They at the time were the only real two threats in the Big 12, right? The Big 12 always ran through the Red River Shootout.
You're right.
Always. And Texas leads that one 62-50-5. So there's a lot of historical success there for Texas, even though Oklahoma's done better as of late. And then the last two, are Florida, Georgia, because the atmosphere is unbelievable. They play in Jacksonville, split stadium, right? They're close in proximity, both in the SEC East. Like, there is a lot of hatred there. And the last one is Miami, Florida State for the same reason, right? The South Florida area in recruiting is massive to those three Florida schools. So when Miami plays Florida State, they're both in the ACC. There's an unbelievable history there of wide left, wide right, all this shit. That game is also a top rivalry. And those are the top six I have.
Yep. And then would your seventh be Notre Dame, USC?
Yeah, I guess so. Because of history, right? Yeah. Because of the historical meaning of that game, it would probably be seven. But my problem is everyone I just named, right? Ohio State, Michigan, Alabama, Auburn, Oklahoma, Texas, Florida, Georgia, Miami, Florida State. There is a conference title on the line. Mm-hmm. USC doesn't really give a fuck about Notre Dame. They're trying to win the Pac-12 and go to the playoffs, right? Now, they might have to beat them to get there. But that game doesn't, it's not like the Ohio State, Michigan game. Everything was on the line last year. If Ohio State beats Michigan, they go to the Big Ten championship. They win the Big Ten championship and they go to the playoffs. When they lost their chance at a playoff, chance to go to Indianapolis, and chance to win a Big Ten title, right? They lost all of that in one game. USC doesn't lose shit except for maybe a playoff berth if they lose to Notre Dame. So there's just not as much on the line. And Notre Dame, they don't even have anything to play for other than a playoff berth.
They're playing for a smile and some sportsmanship.
And the other one is the Pitt West Virginia rivalry, just because there's so many fucking rednecks in West Virginia and that I love. I fucking love. I lived there in West Virginia for a year. Like the dynamic of Pittsburgh people versus West Virginians. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Now you have Michigan State, Michigan higher than Notre Dame.
USC? Yes, Michigan State, Michigan is definitely higher than gotcha. Especially because Michigan State has been able to beat Michigan, you know, on a regular basis. It's mm-hmm. been competitive, and Michigan State is holding their own even when they're down. So, yeah, Michigan State, Michigan is above Notre Dame, USC.
Got you. It's funny because I do think Notre Dame, USC could, hopefully, if these coaches are as good as they're projected to be, could end up being a really, really big-time game moving forward. I hope so. I think that's really, really good for football. I do want to throw a couple Super Chats up, Zach, and then hit the next topic.
Yep.
Cool. Couple ones we got. Thank you, Tom, for the five. How much heat will be on Ryan Day if the Buckeyes lose Saturday? That'd be back-to-back season opening losses to ranked teams. That being said, Ohio State 41-24. They played Minnesota game one. Let's talk about just like opening ranked opponent.
There'll be pressure on him, but he has a whole season to go, right? If they lose this game and it's not a close loss, if they run the table, win the Big Ten, they're in the playoffs. And then mm-hmm. and then it's a matter of what he does after that. But, you know, Ohio State fans are always overreactive. They're dramatic. They will absolutely flip the fuck out. They will absolutely, like, be calling Jim Knowles a fraud and Ryan Day can't win the big one. It's a step back from Urban Meyer. All the narratives will come out. They always do. If you like, when we lost to Virginia Tech, they were all there, right? Mm-hmm. The receivers can't get open, this, that, and the other. And it's like, no, we just didn't have a plan for that because we're fucking just caught off guard and Urban tried to take over. And, you know, not to rehash that one out, but people will freak out. Absolutely. Yeah.
Speaking of the receivers, our guy Matt, thank you for the five. Anything you would have done differently with the development of Wilson and Olave, Paris or Percy in a race also? So two questions.
I surely would have done things differently than Brian. I mean, we're different people, different coaches, but I mean, a lot of it would have been the same. I mean, not only did I learn from Brian, but he learned from me. I mean, we got on the same page in a pretty good way when I was there. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, Brian, so here's the thing. If you really want to like compare Brian Hartline and I, like Brian was a much better fundamental coach when it came to top ends and footwork in top ends. And I learned a lot from him, right? Whereas I was a better football coach when it came to releases and how to win one-on-one battles, how to play physical with your hands and how to block, right? Mm-hmm. So every coach has their strength. Brian obviously played at a much fucking higher level than I ever did. So a lot of the things he taught and believed in, it's because he fucking did it, right? And made millions of dollars doing it. So they would have been developed a little differently, but if Hartline was still there, it would have been Hartline and I developing them. So I don't know. I'm not going to say they would have been better developed, but you know, everyone has their strengths and weaknesses. And I don't know what I would have. I think I would have had them play more physical maybe, mm-hmm. and they would have blocked better. The receivers aren't great blockers right now. That's the one thing I know for sure. If I was a receiver coach, they might not have been as good as receivers, but they would have fucking blocked.
Shout out to our guy, George Pickens. Man, my guy, Scott Carpenter. Chris looking like Russell Wilson's slow cousin. I'm all smiles over here, man. It's game week. The Y Sports Podcast. Player for O'Connell and Clifford to each have a touchdown plus 2,600. Thank me later. I think it's a rushing touchdown.
Yeah, it is rushing touchdown. Yeah, I mean, I think Sean Clifford definitely has a high, high probability to score. And Aiden O'Connell, maybe.
Mm-hmm. All right.
But, I mean, well, for those kind of odds, like I'm going to give you a gambling pick here in a minute. I'll give it to you right now. I always like value plays, right? And so I'm going to tell you about, if you are not unfamiliar with the show, or if you are familiar, you need to take advantage of this. MyBookie, our sponsor, right? With the promo code Menace, you get free deposit match. You put in $500, they give you $500. It's the best online sports book that I've seen. I use it. I know a bunch of our listeners use it. So if you haven't went yet, go over to mybookie.ag and use promo code Menace and sign up right now, right after the show. Get ready for this weekend. But so I'm going to give you, so here's my parlay from yesterday on MyBookie. It's a West Virginia Purdue upset parlay, $100 to win 752, right? If you throw enough of these value plays out there, and my bookie has great odds, if you throw enough of them out, you only need to hit like one out of three, right? Or you don't need to hit half of your bets to win money. So I like value parlays, but here's my parlay that I think is a lock. This is a lock parlay coming straight from me. That is Arkansas Moneyline. I think they beat Cincinnati. And then the Ohio State first quarter over on points at 9.5. But there's the odds right there. You put them together, you're going to get, I think it was $100 to win 150 or something like that. So that's my play for my bookie. So go to my bookie, use promo code Menace, lock in that play, or do what I'm telling you, look for value. That prop is insane. If Aiden O'Connell scores a touchdown and Sean Clifford, they both rush for a touchdown. That those odds are incredible. So go throw it in on my bookie right now with promo code Menace.
Zach, I'd be doing a crime if I didn't mention what happened 15 years ago today.
Oh, yes.
Appalachian State shocked the world.
Biggest upset in the history of the world, and it just so happened to be against Michigan. 15 years ago today. The rocker, if you don't know what a rocker is on field goal, and I don't know his number, you guys will probably go look it up now. He failed at his job, right? So there's the wing on field goal, right? His job is to protect the inside gap with one arm and chip an edge rusher so he can't get there. But he has to chip the edge rusher or else they can bend the corner and block the field goal. The guy inside of him, the tight end, the end man on the line, he is to protect the inside gap and rocker back and create an iron cross so that guy cannot get between him and the wing, right? Their rocker just blocked this guy, left a wide open gap between the wing and the rocker, and he just darted it, blocked the field goal, and the upset, biggest upset in college football history happened. So now you know why. The rocker fucked it up. It wasn't the wing's fault. So all those death threats you sent him, you know, it's like Happy Gilmore. Like get yourself crossed off his list. Go say sorry. It's Billy Madison. Jeez, Happy Gilmore. It was Billy Madison that happened. But yeah, the rocker screwed the pooch.
Yeah, man. What a time. You know, my mom obviously went to Michigan. So that was a great day in our household.
Great day.
And a great day at church the next morning because my whole church knew that she was a Michigan fan.
Oh, yeah.
So we were all smiles. All right, Zach, we got week one started today. I want to ask you before we kind of dig into some other things. What games are you most looking forward to if you had to rank them 1 through 3?
Well, let's go day by day because Thursday, I don't know if everyone knows the slate that is on schedule. And I was corrected by one fan. I kept saying I couldn't read my graphic when it's on screen. I was saying Florida State LSU was Saturday night, but it's actually Sunday night. So right now, tonight, the two games that I'm excited about is West Virginia at Pitt, Penn State at Purdue, right? West Virginia Pitt, 7 o'clock on ESPN. Penn State Purdue is 8 o'clock on Fox. I'm most excited about Penn State Purdue because I think you're going to get it. I mean, I love Big Ten football. I mean, I'm excited about both, but that's the one I'm favoring right there. Friday night, the games that I'm going to keep an eye on, Western Michigan at Michigan State, not because it's going to be a good game, but I just want to see what Michigan State, you know, rolls out on the field. I'm going to watch Temple at Duke, 7:30 on the ACC network because Stan Drayton is the new head coach at Temple. I have to watch my boys' debut game at Duke, and Duke is depleted. So watch out for an upset win in game one for him. And then Friday night, we get another Illinois game. Illinois at Indiana, 8 o'clock on FS1. So Big Ten games every day this week. I guess not Sunday and Monday, but then Saturday, Colorado State at Michigan is 12 o'clock on ABC. Rutgers at Boston College, 12 o'clock on ACC Network. That is the former D coordinator battle, right? Shiano takes on his replacement in Jeff Hafley. I'm really excited about that game, Rutgers at BC, because as much as you don't, no matter what you think, Greg Schiano does not like that motherfucker, because he came in, fixed Schiano's defense. They went to the CFP. He got a head job. It was like Jeff Hafley fixed Schiano's problems. So Schiano has that one circled. Yeah. Then you got Oregon, Georgia on ABC at 3:30. Cincinnati at Arkansas, 3:30 on ESPN. Utah at Florida, 7 o'clock on ESPN. And obviously Notre Dame at Ohio State, 7:30 on ESPN. So those are all the games I'm most excited about. Obviously Ohio State, Notre Dame, Oregon, Georgia, Purdue, Penn State for the regional landscape. And I want to see who Illinois, Indiana. I mean, those are two teams that have been at the bottom of the Big Ten, but Illinois didn't look bad in week zero against an awful opponent. So I'll be interested to see, you know, how they look against a Big Ten foe.
Two games you didn't mention, man. I'm excited to see my guy, Hendon Hooker, kick off his Heisman campaign against Ball State. He should have like 6 touchdowns, should look really crazy. And then additionally, man, if Georgia Tech beats Clemson on Monday night, I'm coming into the show hammered, because I'm just hitting the town the entire night celebrating like we won the chip.
Hey, if they could pull that off, I mean, I'll be pulling for them. I want Georgia Tech to win.
I love Georgia Tech, man. Don't ever get it twisted. But tonight, yeah, but obviously Penn State, Purdue, Pitt, and West Virginia. That's going to be the battle of the backups. All right, Zach, did you see this? JSN talked about it. JSN said yesterday he enjoyed lining up in the backfield. Do you anticipate Coach Day to use JSN like Bama did with Devontae a couple years ago, get a matchup with linebackers? Thank you, fast for the 10.
No, I think they will. And they did it in the Rose Bowl. I mean, he's done that. That's not anything new. They might do it more so. But yeah, I think Ryan's biggest focus right now is how to create mismatches with that kid. Because to just line him up in the slot and run their offense, he'll have a good year. But if you want to have a magical year, you feel like you have an absolute great one. Like, you got to do it. What Sark did with Devontae Smith at Bama was gorgeous. It was beautiful. And Ryan studied it. Ryan studied the whole, obviously after one, he studied the film because Ohio State was playing him. He was mostly involved on the offense, so he didn't watch a ton of it pregame, but then he watched it postgame. And then they did an offseason study on what Sark did with Devontae Smith. And right now they feel like they got one with Jackson Smith and Jigba. So I think you're going to see a lot of shit, a lot of motions, like those crazy return motions, a lot of game planned deals, right? Because there's one thing to just say, all right, here's a package, right? We're going to line up Jackson Smith and Jigba to the boundary one-on-one. Like, that's just putting him somewhere within an offense. And then there's ways to game plan touches and mismatches, right? Where you use motions, shifts, align them up in unique spots, and attack defenses in a different way to feature a special player. And that's what I think Ohio State's going to try to do with him. And it's going to be awesome to see.
We saw last year too with Cooper Kupp a lot. Like, Cooper Kupp at the NFL level, he did a lot of that stuff. Do you think there's a world where JSN ever gets a handoff from the backfield? Just a straight handoff? If they go, No.
Okay. Maybe a jet sweep.
Got you, jet sweep. I was just curious because, like, if you put him in the backfield, can you, like, does that give you room to put a G Scott out there additionally, like an extra receiver and see what you got? Because obviously, well, whatever. Zach Carpenter, thank you for the $2. Zach, can I borrow a dollar for my bookie? Shout out my bookie.
Well, you could have saved your $2 and you'd have had two.
You call that a 2-for-1 special. Oh, you could read this one, Zach.
Chris looks like Donald Faison from Scrubs. Well, guy, I've never watched the show, but it sounds like he's a doctor, at least plays one on TV.
Mm-hmm. That's fine. And our last one before we get to the next topic, KCV, thank you for the $5. I know you talked about talent and leadership, but what did the loss of Cost have to have effect-wise on the 2014 team? Felt like Zeke was running for that guy every game.
So, yeah, I mean, it was very impactful. And I will say this. It was most – obviously, the heaviest impact was in Larry Johnson's room, because Larry Johnson created a culture – and Costa was a walk-on, so it wasn't like he was on the field a lot with guys. But he was going through the workouts with them, and the D-line was extremely tight. And so it just – destroyed them. And outside of that, you know, when you know someone that commits suicide, that just smacks you in the face, right? And I'll never forget, I gave him a ride home after training camp. I did. And just randomly, he was like looking lost. I was like, you need it? And I didn't even know who he was at the time. I said, you need anything? He's like, yeah, I don't think I have a ride. I was like, come on, I got you. I'll drop you off. And I just, you know, you always self-reflect, like, could I have done something differently? Which, no, I couldn't have. I mean, fuck, I didn't know him that well. So a lot of the players didn't know him that well because he was a walk-on D lineman. But the ones that did were devastated. And even if you didn't know him, just that happening, like he was a missing person, everything that happened, it definitely impacted that team. But to say that like Zeke ran for him, Zeke didn't know him that well. But guys like Michael, the D lineman, like, man, did they know him. And man, were they, I just remember them like sobbing, crying in the locker room. And you're like, God, not only does my heart break that this poor kid was struggling like that, not only does my heart break that he took his own life and now he's gone and his family is struggling with it, but you just look at the impact and how much he was loved. And it's like, fuck, suicide is just such an upsetting thing and such a problem right now. Yeah. So I don't have a suicide hotline number, but if you need help, just reach out to me, man. That's all I'm going to say.
No, big facts. And I believe Michael Bennett ended up wearing his jersey number for the rest of that season.
Yeah.
Obviously, you guys went on the three-game run. Zach, I want to switch topics. Man, it's crazy. I over under 5 weeks before we get the full Urban Meyer can save our program frenzy. Because right now, we're just now in week one, and I now have this. I've been tracking them. We track them. Our guy Danny sends it to us. I love it. I'm here for it. Shout out to Danny. He helps a lot with the show prep. He sent an article about Arizona State and about the lookout for Urban Meyer to be their next head coach. Zach, they haven't even played a game yet for anybody to be on the hot seat.
Dan Lebatard is, or Dan, what's his name? Dan Patrick.
Dan Patrick.
And is Lebatarded. All right. I don't know. Urban Meyer is never taking the Arizona State job. That's the most Lebatarded statement I've ever heard. He's never taking the Arizona State job. Just stop it. Like, he will only take a big time job, and Arizona State is certainly not a big time job. It's just never going to happen. I don't know. Yeah. The funny thing is that the one thing that you said in here that Danny said, and it's so true. It doesn't, when they mention Urban Meyer might go to USC, Urban Meyer might go to this place, right? Mm-hmm. It's rarely the case, but what is always true when they mention it is that that coach at that school is fired. like
it's done.
It's done. Herm Edwards is fired. Like, Urban is not going there. But when those rumors start, honestly, there's probably smoke there. That athletic department, through their representation, has probably reached out to his agent. That news kind of leaks out, right? And then all of a sudden, it's like, well, if they're looking for Urban, they're looking for others, which means that some bitch is fired.
Yeah,
so
he's fired.
He's definitely needs to have a good year to save his job, but Urban Meyer will never be the head coach at Arizona State. You can book that.
It's so funny because the article, this is like from a Arizona State newsletter. Urban Meyer is Arizona State's football coach. Dan Patrick says, keep an eye on the Sun Devils. That is written like there's an opening.
Right. That's my favorite. Well, that was
no
USC. That was USC
Edwards.
For a whole year and a half. Mm-hmm. Like, Urban was going to get there. And I know for a fact there was conversations. I talked about that before, but Urban was going to be at USC, and then they kept Clay Helton for another year. You're like, wait a minute. They didn't even fire him.
What happened? All right, Zach, what's the better job, Nebraska or Arizona State?
Nebraska.
Didn't Herm succeed at Arizona State so far?
Why didn't he?
Yeah, what's been wrong?
I don't know intimately how he runs a program, but that's a longtime NFL coach that jumped into college, and it's a very, very different job, a very, very different game. And Arizona State, I mean, Arizona State, those are tough jobs when the Pac-12 is good, right? If Oregon's good, all of a sudden Utah's good. Now USC is going to be good. Like, how the fuck if Washington's been decent? Like, how in the hell is Arizona State supposed to level up? Now, the other problem is there's a badass first-round corner playing for the Buckeyes from sweet Scottsdale, Arizona, right? Mm-hmm. Denzel Burks of the world, Christian Kirk's of the world. Those kids in Scottsdale don't go to Arizona State. It's a lot like Maryland. Like, why is Maryland not good? Well, I don't know. If the kids in the DMV went to Maryland, they would be badass, but they don't. So it all goes back to recruiting, and Arizona is a transplant state. So there's not a lot of, you know, generational fans in Arizona. So it's a tough job.
And let me throw two more things at you. The two best players last year, arguably, Chip Traynham and Jaden Daniels. One's at LSU, one's at Ohio State for a backup job. Just Dylan Rayola from Arizona. He's committed to the Ohio State 1.0. That's Patrick Mahomes 2.0. All right, man. Dan Lanning taking on
the big matchup
ball club.
Right? The son takes on the father. Dan Lanning, the former D coordinator from Oregon, takes on Kirby Smart, his former boss, his mentor. He is his protege. They're going to battle in Mercedes-Benz Stadium, and I want to talk about it. But first, I want you to tell me, who starts 1-0? Does Georgia win the game they're supposed to, or can that goofy son of a bitch right there in that picture, Dan Lanning, can he upset, can he knock Daddy out? Can he, does Daddy have dad strength? Who is going to win that game? Just tell me who starts 1-0. One word in the comment, Georgia or Oregon, whatever you think. So here's how I look at it, Chris, and I'm just going to go through it quickly and then we can discuss about it.
Yeah.
Oregon, here's the biggest thing that in my research and kind of studying, because you can't study film. I don't know what the fuck Dan Lanning is going to do in his program. But I watched their personnel and I studied analytics and I, you know, studied their offensive coordinator who is at Memphis and Arizona State and Florida State. Kenny Dillingham's his name. But here's the reality. They have the most talented roster in the Pac-12 in recruiting rankings. So not including the transfers at USC, because I would argue that now it's USC. But they by far have the most talented defensive roster in the Pac-12. They have the ninth most talented roster in the country based on recruiting rankings. So when you have that, you say, all right, do they potentially have the personnel to pull this off? The answer is yes, they do, right? There's so many unknowns. A lot like Georgia, so many unknowns. But I start with offense, right? Bo Nix goes in, and I think there's a chance this kid has a revamp in his career in this offense because Kenny Dillingham is his stamp, his resume is that they were out in the forefront. They were revolutionizing offense with RPOs. Like they were doing shit before other people did it back at Memphis and all the places he's been, right? And I think that fits Bo Nix extremely well. On top of that, I think Dan Lanning can help them put together the best offensive game plan possible against Georgia. And another point here, Chris, and I've always talked about this every year early in the year, when you play a team like this, because of Dan Lanning's knowledge, if Oregon can't get it done, every opponent Georgia's going to face is going to have the blueprint on how to get it done. Right? They're going to see what Dan Lanning, who knows this defense better than anyone, what he implemented as the best way to take down Kirby Smart. And when you go face a Tennessee that might have better players or whoever, a Bama, anyone that they play on their schedule, they've got a really good attack plan that was gifted to them by your former coordinator, right? So I think this offense fits Bo Nix really well. They returned four of their five O-linemen up front, and Mario Cristobal just left there now. He recruited O-line extremely well and developed the shit out of them as good or better than anyone in the country. So I think they're going to be solid up front, and then they just have a slew of unproven talent at offensive skill. I mean, Byron Caldwell's coming back. He had like 400 yards last year, averaged 6.9 yards per carry. He was their third back. The top three receivers are gone from last year. So there's so much unknown for Oregon. Then you go on the other side of the ball. I mentioned it. The top defensive roster in the Pac-12. Noah Sewell, right? Penei's brother. This has an opportunity to be a national coming out party for those that don't already know about him. Their former five-star linebacker, Justin Flowers, who's now finally healthy. Those two in the middle, that's the core of a solid defense, right? They have two first-team Pac-12 D linemen. They have only one defensive back starter. But the good news, so the weakness is definitely their back end. But Georgia's weakness is their pass game outside of their tight end room, right? So you have to think there's some promise here, mm-hmm. if that makes sense, Chris.
No, I love Justin Flo, man. Justin Flo was one of the most exciting linebackers I'd ever seen kind of coming out of high school. And he plays with such reckless abandonment, Zach, that he keeps getting hurt. So this game being week one is perfect because right now Justin Flo is fresh. And this will be the matchup that kind of can catapult him the right way. Hopefully with Dan Lanning there, he's learned to practice like a pro and also kind of save his body a little bit. But having Justin Flo up there against that tight end room, I mean, with Sewell, I'm 100% here for it. Now, on the offense side of the ball, Oregon only has 58% of the returning production. That's outside the top 85. But on defense, they're returning 69% of their production. And that number would be inflated, but a lot of guys didn't play last year. Like Flo and like Kayvon Thibodeau, obviously, but he's gone. So that's inside the top 60. So mm-hmm. we'll take it with Dan Lanning. You think they've kind of retooled. They've added eight players, about 8,000 snaps from the transfer portal, which means they've added players that could actually play. And Dan Lanning is looking to shock the world, and everyone's counting him out, including myself. I did pick Georgia in this game. But it is a really intriguing matchup for me to watch, and I am very excited to see if we can get the right Bo Nix. Because remember, Bo Nix early, man, he out-dueled Justin Herbert.
Yeah, he did. But I broke it down. He was average at best. I mean, he got all the love because he threw up a jump ball and the kid caught it on a contested catch that wasn't a good throw. And all of a sudden it was like, Bo Nix, the freshman phenom. And it's like, yeah, he kind of didn't play well, though.
Well, yeah, he was inaccurate, but the moment wasn't too big for him is more kind of where I'm at.
No, I mean, at this point, he's been in 100 of them and he's lost most of them. So he certainly can battle adversity. I mean, the fucker can lose and still play next week. That's for sure. I think the biggest question mark here is this, right? You look at Georgia, this football team, and I know all the hype. I get it. Like they have two freshmen that played last year at receiver that had decent years, right? But I still question Stetson Bennett. And here's the game plan, right? Dan Lanning has been going against this offense and these personnel as the defensive coordinator day in, day out in practice. And you look at Stetson Bennett last year when he was protected. He was one of the better quarterbacks in the country. The problem was when he wasn't protected, he shit the bed and couldn't fucking execute, which is under pressure and versus blitz. And that's when great quarterbacks thrive. That's why he's not a great quarterback, right? The Alabama game, in the SEC championship game, he was not well protected. He threw two interceptions and fucking handed the game over, right? Just lost the game for Georgia. In the national championship game, he was well protected and he distributed the ball. Now, keep in mind, he only threw six passes over 10 yards in that game. So so we can't sit here and act like he just balled out, right?
Boy, Dinkin' and Duncan.
He's the 67th best quarterback in the country last year under pressure, 69th best when blitzed, right? But you go the other side of it, right? He was the 19th highest overall graded quarterback, had the second highest yards per attempt, so was getting the most production out of his throws. He had the third best deep ball. He was the 11th best intermediate quarterback. It's just, he was a solid player. But he wasn't dominant, right? He wasn't that quarterback that can go win you that tough game if shit's hitting the fan. Now, what Georgia has on offense is the best tight end room in the country. Brock Bowers is the best tight end in America. And then they have two five stars in that room, Darnell Washington and Eric Gilbert. So that trio is just absurd.
It's unreal. It's absolutely unreal.
And as an offensive coach, what they could potentially do in the run game and play action, if Todd Monken can get his head out of his ass and put together a fucking game plan with those freak shows, the lack of receiver experience and depth won't be as big of a problem, right? Because they lost Jermaine Burton to Bama, George Pickens to the draft, who is, all reports, he's balling for the Steelers. Mm-hmm. He only played in the last four games last year. He was dinged up. I get it. He had only had five catches, zero touchdowns. So this offense and Stetson Bennett just haven't really yielded receiver success. That's why I'm not as concerned about the secondary issues, right? Because it's going to come down to tight end mismatches in the run game, right? So outside of those two, the next seven receivers are back. Ladd McConkey and Adonai Mitchell are the two freshmen that really, you know, they balled out last year. And they outperformed Bama's freshmen, if we're being honest, which wasn't a high bar, but they did. And then they're going to have another two-headed monster in the backfield. I mean, it honestly looks like they took Zamir White and James Cook, and put them in a morph machine, and they just added 2 inches to them, right? Because you have Kenny McIntosh, 6'1", 210, kind of your James Cook of the backfield, and then Kendall Milton, the 6'1", 220, kind of your Zamir White of their backfield. So they'll have that 1-2 punch. You know, Kendall Milton is I think, has a chance to be a really good player, but I think you're going to have a step back in production at the running back room. I love Kenny McIntosh. I think he'll be outstanding. But you're not going to lose Zamir White and James Cook and then just instantly replace them with NFL stars, right? And then their offensive line, both guards got drafted. It should be a really, really good group. They recruited really well there, right? They have Broderick Jones played really well in the national championship game at tackle. So I think this Georgia offense will run the ball decent, and then it's going to be play actions and ways to get the tight end involved is the reality of it. But I don't dislike the matchup for Oregon defensively. Mm-hmm. Now, go ahead.
No, you first. I was just going to bring up numbers.
Well, the only issue that I see here is this Bo Nix offense with the complete unknown at the offensive skill going against this defense that, although it's depleted, they had eight fucking guys drafted off this defense. So for stubborn Georgia fans that'll sit here and act like Georgia's defense still is going to be this generational defense, it's like nobody ever is. You lose eight draft picks from one unit, your defensive unit, you're going to step back a little bit, right? Yeah. Because you look at it, they really have three guys that people are championing. I mean, they have more guys than that coming back, but three guys that people are championing as elite players. Jalen Carter, absolutely probably the best D tackle in the country. Nolan Smith, probably one of the best outside linebackers in the country. I'll give you those. Kelee Ringo is the most overrated fucking player that people think is good. He really is. In the SEC championship game, Alabama targeted him 12 times. He gave up 8 catches for 141 yards, right? Ja'Cory Brooks went 2 for 2 on him. Trayshawn Holdem went 2 for 3 on him. J-Mo had 1 catch on 1 target. Their tight end hit a 61-yarder on him. I'm not buying the hype of Kelee Ringo. I'm not. Now, their secondary is their strength. They bring back free safety Chris Smith. They bring back William Poole in the nickel. And Kelee Ringo hopefully will be a better player. But you're not going to sell me that this is a generational defense. They have 2 kids, in my opinion, that are elite kids now. Now, we'll see who else leveled their game up.
Yeah, we'll see. And it's interesting because the last 5 years, the question for Georgia is, like, can you reload? Last 5 years, their recruiting ranking is in the top 2. Obviously, Bama's one. So they're able to recruit at a high clip. And then if you look at yards per play on offense, they were the only school that was top 5 in both offense and defensive categories. So they're going to run a pretty efficient offense. I think that Bo Nix is going to end up making too many mistakes for Oregon to win this game, but I am super, super excited to watch. That's all I have on it for now. But moving forward, we'll see. You know, as much as we clown Stenson Bennett, he was number 1 in pass efficiency last year in terms
of, but there's reasons for that. They didn't ask him to do shit, right?
Yeah, they had those 5-to-7ers.
Yeah, and while we're talking about it, like, Kelee Ringo gets jerked off by everybody. The guy I forgot to mention is Tyke Smith, who I really like. He got hurt last year and didn't really play down the stretch, but I thought he was a really good player. And I mean, he deserves more hype than Kelee Ringo. He just does.
Yeah, no, I agree. I am excited to see Kendall Milton this year. I mean, I know that Ohio State really liked Kendall Milton. He's in that same class with Bijan Robinson. And Zach, we thought we had both those guys. And then when Bijan was kind of a silent commit to us, then you saw Kendall go a different direction. And then good old Tom Herman scooped up and said some goofy shit. Man, I can't believe it.
The other thing here, I'm going to tell you. Listen, the other thing here is there's a guy that's at Oregon that I think is one of the best in the country. He's worked for Nick Saban, Kirby Smart. He went with Dan Lanning to Oregon, and that's Tosh Lapoy. And if you look back, Tosh Lapoy became a sensation when he was at Cal. You go back and look at the stuff he was getting done recruiting at Cal when he was just a D-line coach at Cal. Young dude, in shape, like, could relate. Fucking Stephon Diggs took an official visit to Cal when he was there. And, you know, I don't know if he's always on the legal side at times, but he's an unbelievable football coach. And you talk about a strong defensive staff. You go from Dan Lanning to Tosh Lapoy and the rest of that staff. Watch out now. Oregon's going to cause fits for fucking Georgia. So you want another my bookie pick? Take the Georgia team total under. I'm telling you, whatever that number is, they're going to score less than that.
Got it. No, I'm tapped in. My score prediction, I have 24-14 Georgia. That's what I'll roll with.
And my man, Zach got games. And I appreciate you, bro, because you watch every show. But yeah, you come in here and talk. Ohio State receiver room has more unknown to it than the Georgia defense. No shit. That's one position group. The Ohio State offense does not have more unknown to it than the Georgia defense. It's not even close.
Mm-hmm. But he's a goofball, man.
He's awesome. Yeah. I love him being here. I love the back and forth, too. Yeah, I forget what our bet is, but I know we got a bet on this Georgia season.
No, we never shook on it because he threw up the spider web. If this happens, then you got to do this. Right. If
he still got to DM me so we can figure out what that bet is, because I'm down. I said what I said, and if I'm wrong, I'll own it.
All right, Zach, before we get out of here, I want to throw this up. What was wrong with Bo Nix at Auburn? Can he make the NFL?
Bo Nix is not a great quarterback. That was what was wrong with him mostly, right? He was not a great quarterback, and he was on, you know, a lesser team than Alabama's of the world. But I think in this offense, right? I think what Oregon is going to do offensively, I think he could have success. But that doesn't mean he's a great quarterback or he's going to play in the NFL, right? Tim Tebow was not a great quarterback. He was a great college football player, right? That's a big difference, a big distinction. Bo Nix could become a really, really good college football player, but he's never going to be a great quarterback.
Yeah. They always call Buckner the Asian Bo Nix whenever he gets space. I know Cool Kid be listening. All right, Zach, I got nothing left for today, man. You killed it. I got my new show out, though, today.
Yeah, Chris's Corner's out. If you didn't catch it. It's on the RSS feed. And go ahead. I'm going to throw this up there. Go check out our Patreon because we got a lot of stuff popping right now. This weekend, we're going to have the post game on Saturday night after the Ohio State game. We're doing a live on YouTube post game reaction show. If you miss it, if you're a Patreon subscriber, that will go on your custom RSS feed. On Sunday, we're doing a call-in show to talk about the whole slate of games Saturday and Thursday. And if you want that phone number to call in, that's a perk for our subscribers. The Colonel level or higher, you get the phone number, you can call in. If not, you can still watch it here on YouTube, and we would appreciate it if you do that. And then a bunch of other shit going on. After the game, every Tuesday, I will have a video breakdown of the weekend. That's exclusive to subscribers. That does not get out because YouTube will flag us for monetization and copyright infringement. And I like this channel. I'd like to keep it up. So we have a bunch of shit going on our Patreon. So go check it out. There's a bunch of different tiers. You can pick one. Our general tier group chat is off the chain. Sarah Blake is going to start sending nudes in there if they keep donating money. So that's all going on. The last thing I do have to mention, I have 25 squares left. The Ohio State Big Board, numbers board. So it's $100 a square, your square, and the numbers change every week. So if you get shitty numbers for the Notre Dame game, they change the next week. It plays in all 12 regular season games. So $100, you have 48 chances to win. If your numbers hit on the first quarter or third quarter, you get $50. If it hit halftime of any of those 12 games, you get money back, $100. And if it hits a final score, you double your money instantly. You win $200. So last year we had several people were multiple game winners. We had one person who won three different times in one game. They won second quarter, halftime, third quarter, final score, I believe. And so they cashed out $350 in one game, and they still had like eight games to play. So if you're interested in buying a square, jump down in the bio. The Venmo is at Cameron Media. That's it. No LLC, no underscore. It's at Cameron Media. Venmo $100. We'll get you on the board. Chance to win. And we're going to sell till it sells out. We got 25 left. We got what? 48 hour mode. So we got 25 to sell in 48 hour. We need to sell about one every 2 hours. Go ahead and get your square now. And Chris, I think that's all the sales bullshit I have to do.
Yes, sir. Want to throw up this super sticker. Gio, thank you for the five. But go join the Patreon. Zach, I got nothing else, man. Let's get out of here.
Appreciate everybody, man. Menace out.